Hi, Scott.
Hey.
Hi, we're good to go.
All right.
So let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Sure things. I graduated summer 2016, and I was a music business major. I was a performance business double major for a few years, and I kind of did that for as long as I could, just to kind of get both classes or classes from both of those tracks. And then I ended up just doing the single major in the end, just to, you know, get it done in 4 years in a semester. So that's why I was graduated in summer as opposed to spring.
Understood. And music business has different tracks. Like, I know entrepreneurial track, management track are two popular ones. There are others. Do you recall which track you did?
Yeah, I was in the marketing.
Cool. And what was your principal instrument?
My principal instrument was drums.
Cool. All right. We will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
Yeah, so currently kind of a way off track from from Berkeley and stuff. I am a software engineer at a startup here in Seattle called Tread, which is a peer-to-peer car marketplace, kind of trying to, you know, bring the assurances and products that you would find at a normal car dealership and giving that autonomy to individuals. So that's what I'm working on now.
So we're talking like used cars, presumably.
Yes. All used cars.
So, allow me to be a little bit dumb for a moment. I'm thinking if there's things like Craigslist where people put something up for sale. So is this sort of like a Craigslist with presumably some more functionality? Or how does this differ from someone going car for sale on Craigslist?
Sure. So the biggest thing with us is to bring those products that you'd find at a dealership, as well as like their assurances. So, you know, if you're selling your car and you have a loan on it, for example, like that can be a huge pain. Because basically what would have to happen, you'd have to find a buyer. They would have to front you the cash so that you could then pay off your loan to whatever bank or dealership. And then they would have to, you know, process the payment, get the title, give it to you, which can take weeks. And this whole time a stranger basically has to trust you to do all that. So that's one of the instances where, you know, our company is pretty awesome because we handle all the titling, paperwork and all the money transfer. So there's no risk on either side because we are a licensed dealership in all the states we operate in right now. So we can do that stuff. So that's one of the big things is, you know, with loans. And then we have our own lending partners as well. One of the biggest of which is Ally Bank. And we're partnered with some credit unions that are big over here in Seattle and on the West Coast. So if you're buying a car, you know, a lot of the time, if you're trying to buy a private party car, a lot of banks or won't fund that. Or if they will, it's just kind of a pain. So we can do that all on our website. You know, you can find a car on our website, go do a test drive, submit a finance application through our website. You know, it's Saturday at 6:30 p.m. We can get you an approval, send you a temporary permit to your email that you can print out, and you're driving away in your car, like that quickly. So that's the other side of kind of the buying side. And like I said, we take care of all the paperwork and title transfer, so you don't need to go to the DMV. You don't have to worry about you know, getting scammed from someone. We do all the registration checks and things like that. So, and the whole time we're all online, so we don't have the overhead of a dealership, so we can do all this stuff way cheaper. So not only is it kind of more convenient, quicker tech way, but also the seller is going to get more money for their car. Because, you know, if you just trade your car into a dealership, you get about 60 to 70% of your value, maybe. And then on the other side, you know, the buyer's getting a better price too, than from a dealership because the dealership just marks up the car so much. So we're kind of going after that, that niche space for people who are, you know, trying to save money and are buying used cars. You know, that said, there's definitely pros to, you know, trading in your car or buying directly from a dealership. If money's not a problem or if time's or if time is a problem, you know, options like that are good. But we're really looking to help out people who are trying to save money and, you know, get the best deal for the car.
Gotcha. Tread. So it's just TREAD, Tread?
TRED.
TRED.
Gotcha. Yeah, no A. Yeah.
And about how big is your company in terms of people?
Now we are about, I want to say 30. We're kind of, about a year ago, we were only 15. So we've been, you know, growing and expanding to more states and adding more people. And, you know, as a startup, always trying to fundraise and stuff. So we've been adding some more people, as of late. So I think around 30 or so.
Gotcha. And, you're one of how many software engineers?
I am one of 8 total software engineers.
Understood. So, okay, yeah, I think I guess you said Tread has this website where people look at cars and presumably find cars in their area and, you know, probably some search engine that meet a bunch of the criteria, right, if someone specifies the model.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Do you know, by the way, how does Tread make its money? Does it take a percentage of the selling price, or?
That's correct. Yeah, we take a fee. It's the greater of 2.99% or 4.99. But like I said, we usually get people like 15% more than they would get trading into a dealership or something like that. So at the end of the day, even though we do have a fee, people usually get more money for their car. But yeah, that is how we make our money there, is on that seller fee.
Well, you just said 2.99, so 3%. If you're selling a high-end car, we're talking 3%. That's nothing. That's less than a real estate agent gets.
Yeah, and that number is capped too. I forget if the cap is 1,000 or 1,500 right now, but you know, we sold a couple, you know, brand new Tesla Model X, the P90D, or P100D, the very top of the line one. It's like a $140,000 car, and you know, the guy only paid, you know, I think $1,000 for us to handle all the, you know, the escrow, all that money transfer, you know, all the title transfer, which for a car that expensive can be pretty nerve wracking.
Yeah,
so,
that's a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And how long's your company been around, by the way?
Tread's been around, I believe, since 2013, and then went through a pretty major pivot in 2015, 2016. Actually, prior to the kind of peer-to-peer marketplace model, they were kind of like delivering test drives to people's homes. So what they would do is they would get a car from a dealership and bring it to a person's home. And then I assume collect a fee. I don't exactly know the full previous business model. But basically the CEO figured out, you know, these people buying cars, what they really needed help with was selling the car they were, you know, about to have in their lot. And so that's why he pivoted towards the kind of peer-to-peer marketplace.
How many states are you active in?
So we are active in Washington, Seattle, in California, San Francisco, LA, San Diego, Oregon also, in Portland, Texas, Austin, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio. And we just launched in Florida last week, actually, in Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, and Miami.
Okay. Got it. Let's focus in on your job. You're the software engineer, or one of the software engineers. So what specifically, what's your sphere of influence, or what's your responsibility?
Sure. So I was actually the first junior hire, actually the first even non-senior hire, because I actually worked for Tread about 2 years ago. I worked for them in operations for about a year. I was in sales for about 6 months, and then I went on to kind of transaction management for about 6 months as well, which would be, you know, doing all the paperwork, making sure the money goes to the right places, making sure the finance and insurance is registered, making sure the titling is good. So that I did that for about 6 months. And actually in that role, you know, I got to work with the engineers a lot directly, providing feedback, and that kind of inspired me to go back to school to learn to code. So I did that, learned to code,
yeah,
rejoined
we'll,
them.
We'll go into more detail on that later. But
sure, sure. And then rejoined it as an intern, and then was hired on as a junior software engineer. Otherwise,
is that
kind
your
of
title,
only
junior software engineer?
It's technically just just software engineer, but I really am a junior engineer. Because all the other guys there, they're all seniors. You know, they've been working in the industry for a long time. Sure. I think a lot of the value I provide is that there are a lot of things that, you know, frankly, these guys are too qualified to be doing that is perfect work for, you know, someone like me who's just getting into the industry. With such a small team, I work hand in hand with the CTO a lot, and, you know, just kind of seeing some of the tasks that he has to do, it's like he has way more important things to do than some of these things. Not to say they're not important, but it's better for, you know, a junior engineer. For instance,
my
when
wife
we opened
is
up
a software quality engineer. She's the senior person, and I'm totally cognizant of the, can we get a junior person to do this crap?
Right, exactly. And, you know, as a startup, you know, they don't have a lot of money, and hiring as software engineers can cost a lot of money, and especially a junior one, it can be a little risky. So they just never really did that. But since I had a history, you know, they kind of took a risk on me. So,
I was just about to ask, because sometimes at a company, even a fairly, you know, small company, you'll have different engineers, each with their sphere of responsibility. But my impression here is maybe, do you just sort of float around and whoever needs something done, they pull you in and you do it?
Yeah, pretty much. That said, like I said, I did work before on the operations team. So kind of one of my first projects was building a Chrome extension for our operations team. Because as I said, you know, we process a lot of credit applications, and, you know, one of the companies we work with, we can't hit their API directly. If people don't know what an API is, basically we send information to a company directly, like through the internet. So we couldn't do that with them. So all of our transaction managers had to manually by hand type in these huge credit applications, which A is very error prone. And if you make an error, it can mess up a credit application. You got to call the bank underwriter. It's this huge pain. The customer's, you know, not happy. So it's just not a good experience. And then B, it takes a long time just manually typing in like 60 inputs. So one of my first projects was to make a Chrome extension that when we got a credit application, it would copy all the info. They would just go to the credit application website, press a button on the Chrome extension, and it would autofill their entire form. So that's kind of just like a little one-off thing that I did.
Got it. And then do you mind giving an example of another project you did recently?
Yeah, sure. So this would be one that kind of goes under the perfect for a junior engineer and not a senior to do.
Sure.
So when we opened up in Florida, or when we opened up in any state, but recently when we opened up in Florida, part of what we have to do is we have to get all the DMV documents from the state and digitize them and turn them into PDFs and, you know, get them into our automation process online. And it's kind of a tedious task doing that and setting up all the PDFs and testing them and making sure they're getting filled out properly and, you know, syncing with the APIs that they need to go to and making sure that they're accepting them correctly.
Sure.
And as you guys probably know, like DMV paperwork is not exactly concise. And there's a lot of, you know, sections that do need to be filled out or don't actually need to be filled out. So kind of figuring all that stuff out.
So making these forms and putting them all as functional online forms, I can see.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Title application, there's forms for specific lenders in each state, bill of sale, just all these different DMV requirements.
Got it. Understood. Hey, I'm sure it varies, but on average, how many hours a week do you work?
Usually about 40. I usually do 9 to 5. Not really expected to go outside that, but, you know, like when we're doing the Florida launch, times like that, probably worked a little more, but overall, yeah, about 40.
Very cool. And again, I don't ask people how much they're paid, but I'm a little curious about the structure of your pay. I assume you're a salaried employee as opposed to a contractor.
Yes, that's correct.
And just curious, did you get any stock options?
I did, yes.
Okay, cool. Sometimes with startups, you're paid a little less in the hope that the company does well, and then you do really well with it.
Yep, that's pretty much the case for me. That's how I do get paid well enough where I can live comfortably. I mean, I could have, you know, being in Seattle, probably made more money working for Amazon or Microsoft or, you know, one of the other tech companies here. But, you know, I do love the product. Kind of the only thing I really like more than music is cars. So the product aligned with me. Loved everyone on the team. And, you know, it's kind of exciting working for a startup. And like you said, you know, who knows what can happen. So we'll see.
You answered my next question, which was if you were kind of into cars. And I was going to ask that speaking as a non-musician who teaches at Berkeley.
No, I am completely obsessed with cars. I've been since I was like 3 years old. Always been a passion of mine alongside with music. So, yeah.
Would you believe that when I speak with people who are in a very specific industry like that, I feel like it's a little bit under 50% who are actually into it.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, most of the people
50% just kind of fall into something. Like one guy who works for like a company that does like Major League Baseball, and he's like, I watch the occasional game.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the case in my company too. I mean, pretty much all the people who work there are passionate about the company, but you know, not all of them are car people. And I honestly think that's great. Like they can see the value in the company without, you know, just liking cars. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
Sure. So putting aside the fact that you're working in something that, you know, let's say you enjoy the subject material, what if the criteria you had to hit to qualify for these interviews is indeed that you enjoy what you do? So could you talk a little more about what it is about, you know, being a software engineer that you enjoy?
Yeah, it's kind of a perfect storm of things. Firstly, I think coding and building software is a lot more creative of a thing than, you know, many people would maybe expect. Obviously, there's aspects of it that aren't, and it kind of depends where you're working and stuff. But, you know, if you're just making your own stuff in your free time, it's as creative as, you know, playing an instrument, in my opinion. So, you know, having a love for music and stuff, it kind of scratched that creative itch for me of just having, you know, kind of the power at my fingertips to build whatever I want. So I always thought that was very cool. And also just kind of the lifestyle that comes along with a software engineer, especially at a startup. It's kind of more relaxed and laid back. You know, I don't have to wear like a tie to work, or there's no dress code, things like that. And just kind of the work itself, I'm kind of more of a introverted person. So, you know, before working sales and operations and talking with people all day, I liked it, but it just took a lot out on me, just kind of mentally. Mm-hmm. So I think this role kind of just suits me a little better. And finally, just like the actual work itself, just, you know, like I said, I'm obsessed with cars. I have two cars that I work on. One of them is a full-time project car pretty much, and I love fixing things. And that's basically what most of software engineering is. It's just, you're having problems, you troubleshoot it and you fix it. Just like, you know, working on a car. If you got a leak, you identify where the leak is. You figure out the problem and you fix it. So it kind of scratches that itch for me too, of just problem solving and figuring things out.
Gotcha. One other question about your software development. I've spoken with a decent number of software engineers. Seems like one of the more common fields people go into. Mm-hmm. Some companies, the software engineer has a specific task where it's like they build it, but there's a project manager who figures it out, and a product manager and a quality engineer, and sometimes mm-hmm. even like a designer who's a separate person. And then there are mm-hmm. other companies where the approach is that the software engineer does everything soup to nuts. And it's like, which is more closer to your job? Like, do you just do the code and other people deal with the other stuff, or are you testing your stuff and planning it and designing it, etc.?
Yeah, definitely doing everything. As a startup with such a small team, we all have to wear a lot of hats. We do have a fella who's a senior and our principal engineer and also like lead designer. So he kind of has, last say on design things and how things should look. But that said, like for instance, for my Chrome extension, I did everything myself. I mean, it's not a customer facing piece of software, so it wasn't as important, but it was kind of just like, oh, here's a project idea, go for it, run with it and figure it out. Being such a small team where there aren't, project managers or QA and stuff like that, obviously there's a reason those roles exist and they're very helpful. But it's also, kind of exciting and cool to be in a place with so much autonomy where I can just kind of, figure it out and do what I want. And it's a little more strict on customer facing things. Obviously we review all code and things like that, but we don't have any strict, project managers or QA engineers. It's kind of, we all just take it upon ourselves to do that. We all test each other's code and we all contribute ideas and things like that.
So, would you describe the methodology of your company as waterfall, agile, or just screw it, get it done?
Somewhere between agile and screw it, just get it done. Again, I'm being such a small team and, we're always changing things and always iterating. A lot of the time it's just get things done as fast as we can and, we'll figure other things out once the most important thing at hand is done. Especially where we're at now, where we're just kind of, I feel like we've really honed in the product itself. It's probably a lot different, a year ago before I joined. I'd actually be pretty curious to see what it was like back then. But now the product is really more honed in, and we're really just focusing on scaling and expanding. So I feel like it's a little different now in kind of our mindset.
Sure. So, all right, let's take it back now to 2016. Although, if you feel this story has a logical earlier starting point, we can go back further. But, I mean, guessing you're not thinking software engineers, things are finishing up at Berkeley?
No, was not thinking that at all.
Okay, so let's say, put us, we'll take it back then to the summer of 16. Kind of put us in your headspace as things were finishing up at Berkeley, and then we'll take it one step at a time, both what you were doing, but also where you were at,
Sure.
from there to
So
where
it
you are
was,
now.
yeah. So obviously was in Boston finishing up my last semester. Didn't really have any like hard like leads on the job front. Kind of my main focus was a band I was playing in at the time. That was kind of just my main focus on everything. Just kind of wanted to give the whole band thing a go. And so we were all graduating that spring or summer. So we were trying to kind of figure things out, figure out what our next steps were. And as a group of five guys, kind of procrastinated on that for a bit, obviously, until we finally landed on moving to Nashville eventually. Part of that, we were kind of in limbo in Northern Virginia just because two guys out of the band had lived there. So there was free housing there with parents. So we lived in Nova for about a month before moving to Nashville in September 2016.
Okay, cool. So you moved to Nashville, hoping to make it music industry. By the way, real quick ask, where are you from originally? Like, where are your folks?
I'm from Seattle originally.
Got it. Okay, so all right, there you are. You're in Nashville with your bandmates. What next?
Yeah, so we're in Nashville, living in a house and stuff, giving it a go, playing shows. In the meantime, to make, ends meet, I was working as a valet, parking cars, kind of going back to the car theme there. So I was doing that at night to make ends meet. During the day, you know, we would record and practice and stuff like that. And then unfortunately, you know, life happens. After a few months, a couple of the guys, you know, had things come up and two of them had to move home, which was a bummer. So I was in Nashville with, you know, half a band and a couple other people moved into the house for them. And at that point, I kind of wanted to, you know, put my music business degree to work a little bit more because I had more time. Mm-hmm. And so I actually got a job working for ASCAP, music licensing, obviously.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I was.
Did you just apply and got the job, or did you have like a special end, you know, somebody there?
Yeah, I actually got pretty lucky. So one of the guys who moved into the house for one of the guys who moved home, his name is Jimmy. He actually went to Berkeley too. Very nice dude. He started working at ASCAP, and I forgot how he got in there. I think he knew someone else from Berkeley who lived there, or I mean, not lived there, who worked there. And then through him, I got an interview and got a job as well. We were doing the same position, the licensing associate.
Cool. Sounds like a great sort of entry-level job in the music business. We wouldn't be having this conversation if you were still doing it. So what happened?
Yeah, so it was a great, you know, entry level job. It was basically a sales job, but actually kind of enjoyed it.
Wait, you know, what were you doing again? I didn't realize ASCAP did sales funding.
I mean, it was kind of like, weird. We're in that. Yes, it was. So. You know, obviously all these people using music in, you know, whatever public setting, they need a license for that. However, most people don't know that. So my job was basically to call businesses and, you know, set them up with licenses. You know, some of the time people knew exactly what ASCAP was. If it was new business, they're, you know, basically awaiting our call and they'd get their license. Other times, you know, we'd have businesses that are using tons of music who would not really know what ASCAP was. And so my job was kind of to, you know, inform them and educate them and basically be a teacher on why music licensing is important and why it's the law to have those licenses. But ultimately it was a revenue producing position and commission based. So kind of a lot of my job was mainly just looking out for new places that were opening up and using music and getting them licensed. At least that's what, I focused on. That's where the real money was.
Sure.
So yeah, I did that for a while. And it actually, after a three month period, you can do that remotely from home. So I did that from home in Nashville for a bit, which I liked a lot. I love working from home. Another reason why I like being a software engineer, I get to do that sometimes now.
Oh, nice.
But anyway, so I was working from home, and as much as I love Nashville, you know, I had originally moved there to do music and I wasn't really doing it as much anymore. And so I kind of
sort of disintegrated and.
Right. And so I kind of felt the want or the need to go back home. And so I talked to ASCAP and they would let me do it remotely in Seattle. As you know, it was a sales job. And as long as I was hitting my numbers, they don't care where I live. So I moved back to Seattle, still working for ASCAP, and
so
did that.
When did you make this move? Like the spring of 17?
Let's see. It was actually September 17. So I lived in Nashville for 1 year, the full year of the lease on our house, mm-hmm. and then moved back September 17. And yeah, I did ASCAP for about 3 more months. Then, you know, I just happened to kind of stumble upon. Firstly, I should say I was looking to get into a more tech startup industry job.
What made you want to get more into tech? And when you say tech, were you thinking specifically music tech or kind of any tech?
Kind of anything. I like working at ASCAP, but it is an old company and it's not really a tech one. I kind of just wanted to be in a company that was innovating and moving faster. And, you know, music licensing is important, but it's definitely not my passion by any means. So I kind of just wanted to work for a company that, you know, was putting out a product that I thought was, you know, bringing good to the world in one form or, form or another. So I was really trying to look at, you know, tech and startup positions. And in Seattle, there's a ton of that. And I just kind of stumbled upon a job posting for Tread, working sales at Tread. And, you know, I'd already been working sales. And so I had that on my resume, and I interviewed with Tread and got the job.
And so, got it. Was it, was the Tread job another commission-based sales?
Yes and no. It wasn't directly commission-based. You know, it wasn't like if you got someone to sign up, you get a commission. It was more we had different metrics for that, and it was only partly commission. So, for instance,
so you might get a bonus if you did really well.
Right, right. Like we had a minimum chat response time. For instance, we have a chat, you know, client through our website, and so we'd have to, you know, respond within 5 minutes, or make sure we answer all the, you know, have a 95% call answer rate, or things like that.
Got it. Got it. So, so then you said you did this sales job. Can I ask, how was the pay relative to ASCAP? Was this like a step up or more like a lateral move?
It was pretty loud. I mean, it was a little bit more, but really marginal.
I'm really sorry. I was going to say, phone's ready, I'll let the machine get it. But just
No problem. but yeah, it was pretty much a lot. I mean, like I said, like a slight increase, you know, maybe 3%, 5% increase or something.
Got it, got it. Not enough that you would be looking for a job just for the pay boost, but it was more like this was more what you were interested in.
Or Debbie at the beach. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I only... Like I said, the ASCAP job was nice. I could work from home. You know, I was pretty good at my job too. So honestly, you know, to be candid, I didn't need to work a 40-hour week to go above my goals. You know, it was commission based, so I made, you know, money. You know, the harder I worked, pretty much, but I didn't have to work that hard to hit those goals. So it was a pretty comfy job, honestly. And you know, I loved working from home, so I kind of gave that stuff up to. You know, work in tech and work for a company that I thought was really cool.
Got it. And it sounded like the fact that you had been interested in cars, or that you were interested, and that it was doing that, that sounded like it had some of the appeal.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty much all of the appeal, honestly. you know, I saw the posting and saw that it had to do about cars, and I checked out their website, and, you know, I thought it was, frankly, like, a brilliant idea, and it was something I wanted to be a part of.
Got it. So really quickly, on your, you said you worked at sales for this place, but this is like the website intermediary. So like, who were you selling to and how were you selling? We won't go into nearly as much detail as, you know, your current job, but just like, who were you selling to? Who were the customers?
Yeah. So basically, you know, as a website, most of our advertising is SEO and stuff like that. So when people, you know, in our markets type into Google how to sell a car or what's my car worth or anything, Tread's going to be number one. We're very good at that stuff. And then, you know, obviously those people go to our website and they either, you know, send us a chat or they give us a call. And so then my job was to, you know, we sell these people on the value props of Tread. Kind of like what I did to you at the beginning of our conversation. And yeah, just kind of tell them what Tread's about, why we're great, and why they should, you know, give us a shot at in selling their car.
Got it. And then, as you say, you know, you got, they measured how many people ultimately did say, all right, sounds good.
They didn't do that like directly. Cause you know, honestly, even at that point, the product was pretty good, and our job was really just to, you know, make sure people understand what Tread is. And as long as we do that, you know, and at that time, or I forget what the fee structure was, but it was free to sign up. So, you know, pretty much anyone who would just hear us out would give us a shot. So, Really, our managers weren't so concerned about just numbers, but just making sure that, you know, we're basically being good teachers and explainers.
Got it. Very cool. So you said you were, how long then were you working in sales?
I think about 3 or 4 months. I think I said 6 earlier, but I think it was actually less than that. I think it was 3 or 4 months.
Okay, so we're now into, I think, the spring of 2018.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And then what was your next move?
And then I went over to the transaction management team. That side of the aisle, they had a couple people leave unexpectedly. One person went back to school, another person got another job. So there's kind of a couple seats open over there. So that's kind of like a mini promotion, I guess. There's small pay raise. And then over there, as I kind of touched on earlier, I was basically handling all the transactions, you know, paying people, submitting the credit applications, registering their finance and insurance products. And that role was still customer facing too. So I was still taking calls and chats over there. You know, people who are meeting up for a test drive and want to buy a car, walking them through the process. It's kind of like the closer role, if you will.
So similar-ish work, but a little more money and maybe a little less stress.
I would actually say it was a lot more stressful.
Okay.
All the details involved with it. Like, for instance, at this time, you know, we have it built now, but at that time we didn't have automated payments. So we would literally have to go into our company online bank and pay people, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. And, you know, if you send that to the wrong person, that's gone forever. They don't have to send it back for whatever reason. So literally every time I had to pay someone, it was just stressful. And then also you're working with people who are at the end of the transaction, which is the most stressful part, where they, you know, have to hand off their car and keys to a stranger and hope that this person from this website that's talking to them on the phone isn't a scam. So people at that point of the transaction are often, you know, a little anxious and very stressful. So a lot of the times the people I was talking with were just kind of on edge a little bit. You know, that job was a lot of just putting out fires of people who are upset for one little reason or another because of the gravity of the transaction.
Got it. And let's go to a little more detail then. So, because you went from there ultimately to software engineering, a little more detail, like how did that all happen?
Yeah. So the team at that point was probably only 18, 20 people or so. And the site was still, you know, the product was good, but there were a lot of, you know, things that could be built out more, especially on the operations side of the business.
Sure.
And so a lot of, you know, what we did with the engineers was provide them feedback on different tools or just small little tweaks here and there that we would hear from customers. So, you know, a lot of the times I would, you know, shoot a message to CTO and say, hey, a customer said this, what do you think? And he'd be like, oh yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And, you know, an hour later that change would be done and published to the website. And I just thought that was like super cool. And I just wanted to do stuff like that. And, you know, like I said earlier, I like fixing things and building. So, that just really appealed to me when, you know, you could see a little problem somewhere on the website or whatever and you know, make a fix or build something to make people's lives better.
Right. So then how did you get into that? Like, did you start doing some of this while still at your job? Or I think I heard you say you went to get some training. Yeah, talk about how you then made this transition.
Sure. So yeah, I decided I wanted to kind of learn more about coding and stuff. And, you know, I'd heard about people doing boot camps and learning online and stuff. I'm pretty active on Twitter in the tech community. So, you know, that kind of stuff is always being bounced around there. So I decided, you know, I'm going to really try to learn to code on my own for a couple months. And if I like it and I stick with it, you know, maybe I'll go back to school. So what I started doing is every day before work, I would get up at 5:30 a.m. and code for an hour, hour and a half. I did that every day for like 2.5-3 months during the week.
And is this what, the summer of 2018 or?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, probably. I think I did that like May to July or so, just to make sure that, you know, it was something I really liked and, you know, I wanted to really commit to it. And, you know, obviously get some skills along the way. And
what were you, mm-hmm. which, many people use like free online coding stuff to learn it. Is that what you did or did you use Google yep. stuff? Or if you used a free one, do you mind sharing like what did you use?
Yeah, yeah. I was using mostly freecodecamp.org. They're awesome. And then also Codecademy. I did a lot of the free stuff on Codecademy mm-hmm. and liked it so much. I think I got one of their subscriptions too, which was like $9 a month or something. Wasn't very expensive at all. But yeah, I was mostly just using those two to, learn stuff and figure things out.
Got it. So you say after 2 or 3 months, you're liking it. This feels like a good career direction. So what was your next step?
Yeah. Next step was, you know, figuring out where I wanted to go back to school. And being from Seattle, you know, I grew up here. There's University of Washington. I actually was accepted into University of Washington out of high school, but obviously went to Berkeley instead. So I figured I'd reach out to them, see if I could go back to school and, you know, learn computer science there. But unfortunately, because I wasn't a fresh undergrad, they wouldn't even let me apply, which was kind of a heartbreak, you know, from my hometown university, you know, paid taxes to them my whole life. And my parents went there and
you're
I was
not
accepted
allowed
there
to get a second bachelor's degree. You're saying,
yeah, because I wasn't an undergrad, I couldn't apply to the computer science school. Couldn't even apply. So that was kind of a bummer, which actually turned out to be a really good thing. So then, you know, I kind of looked for more non-traditional routes, you know, boot camps and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I'd heard of, I went to Lambda School, and I'd heard about them on Twitter, just hearing things about them here and there. And, you know, one thing I like to do a lot is I like to support companies I believe in. I believe voting with your dollar is, you know, the most powerful way you can vote. Mm-hmm. And I heard about Lambda School and their whole model of, you know, we'll teach you to code. You don't pay a cent until you have a job making over 50 grand in your industry. And at that point you pay back to a capped amount, you know, the whole income share agreement model.
Oh, interesting. You know, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is this a specific Seattle based one or is this like a General Assembly or like, are they a national level one?
They're actually international now, which is pretty awesome. They have students in all 50 states. They're in the UK. They have some in Africa, and I believe they're expanding to India soon too. They've been growing like crazy.
Are they purely online or is there a physical campus?
Yep, purely online. And they're technically a startup. You know, they were part of Y Combinator, Startup Accelerator. So, you know, they're technically a for-profit college, which, you know, there's definitely a connotation around that. But, you know, I did the research into it and, you know, saw people coming out of it successful. And, you know, I think it's a great thing for society as a whole. You know, we all know about the huge student debt problem, and Lambda School is kind of a different kind of school where the incentives are aligned, where, you know, they don't make money until I make money, which yeah. is the whole, you know, if I went through Lambda and didn't get a job, you know, after 5 years, that income share agreement is done. And, you know, they don't make money. So
what's
their incentive is to get me a job.
Yeah. What's their cut?
You can pay 20 grand up front, or you can pay back 17% of your paycheck for 2 years, capped at $30,000 max. Okay. So if you pay off that 30 grand in a year, that's it.
Yeah, so
or
if you don't, thinking if you're making 60 grand, you're basically that's kind of the break even point. If you make about 60 grand, you're paying about 10 grand a year for 2 years. But as you say, you're paying, if it doesn't turn into a good job, you pay a whole lot less.
Yeah, you actually don't pay anything. Like I didn't pay a single cent until I got a job, which was, you know, pretty amazing. I went through the whole program all 9 months and didn't, I mean, I paid my time. That's, you know, kind of a big thing, but, you know, didn't have to take out any loans or anything like that, which was pretty great.
So I assume at the Lambda School, this was a certificate, right, as opposed to a master's degree.
Yeah, it's technically a certificate.
Was it
I actually didn't even. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, is this a certificate in software engineering then, or something more specific?
Yeah, full stack web development and computer science is technically the certificate. I actually, funny enough, didn't really technically finish Lambda School. I actually kind of got a job before I was done, only by, a few weeks or so. But kind of that's the CEO. His name is Austin Allred, very smart fellow. His whole thing is, you know, the point of Lambda is to get you a job, like not necessarily, you know, a piece of paper or something. And a lot of people, they do get a job before it's done. And, you know, it's funny, even interviewing at a lot of the tech companies around here, you know, at least for this role as a software engineer, it's kind of like music, where people don't care where you went to school, what piece of paper you have. It's, can you code? Like, can you build this stuff? You know, similar in music, people don't care if you went to Berkeley or not. Is, can you play? Do you have the chops to play? If so, you know, great, awesome. It's very similar in software engineering in that way, which I think was very appealing to me. I don't really like, you know, politics, nepotism, things like that. So being somewhere where it's like, you know, show up and do your job and prove that you have the skills, I think that was very attractive to me.
That's great. Now, when you were doing Lambda School, was this while you were working full time, or did you leave your other job in order to do Lambda School?
Yeah, I quit my job to do the full time Lambda School program. They do have a part time program, but it takes about twice as long. You know, I was lucky enough to be in a position where I could, you know, move back in with my dad and live there for free. So, you know, I kind of just wanted to knock out Lambda School and get it done as fast as I could. Sure. It is a 9-to-5 program every day. So basically it's a full time job, and they say it's 9-to-5. It's really like 9-to-8, you know, it was a ton of work.
I'm impressed because I've spoken with a decent number of people who've gone to these boot camps, but it feels like most of these boot camps are 3 or 4 months, and you're talking about a 9-month program of pretty much equal intensity. So,
yeah, it was a lot. And you know, that's one of their selling points is, with Lambda, with, you know, the intensity and how much time we get, we actually have more time coding than a traditional computer science degree from a different university. So it's definitely a lot. It's very intense. It's a lot to take in. But, you know, I kind of wanted that. I wanted to, you know, make a change. And I, like I said, I had the means to move in with my parents and kind of just focus on this and knock it out.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So, if I'm doing my math, that takes us into the spring of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like you ended up back at Tred. So how did that process happen?
Yeah, well, when I originally quit, you know, I was very candid with the CTO and CEO and said, you know, I love Tred. I love the company. My end goal is to rejoin you guys as a software engineer. I know I have a lot to do to make that happen, but that's what I want to do. And so I made that clear when I left, you know, left on good terms, obviously, and everything, and, you know, stayed in touch with everyone on the team. And, you know, I was still in their Slack and stuff, which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, once I kind of felt comfortable, with about, I don't know, two months left of Lambda, I reached back out and, you know, let them know I was going to be finishing up soon and was wondering if they would, you know, let me intern. And, you know, kind of prove myself, to do it for free, which a lot of people might disagree with. But, you know, again, I was kind of in a situation where I didn't really need money and just kind of wanted to get my foot in the door. They actually ended up paying me anyways, not much, basically, which isn't bad in Seattle, but still, I started interning for them part time while I was still doing Lambda. So I was doing that on the nights and over the weekend and stuff. And,
For how long were you doing both?
I did that for, I want to say, a month and a half or two.
That's not very long. And then what? They just said, okay, you're hired.
Well, I was getting down to almost being done with Lambda, and I was starting to do job interviews. You know, you don't have to wait till you're done to do job interviews, obviously, and I felt comfortable enough to do that. Mm-hmm. And I was going through some, and I was actually got through a couple rounds at Amazon, Which was great, but honestly, kind of the whole process of a company that big, you know, Tread was always my main goal, and I wanted to interview other places just to kind of see what it was like. And sure. Through with Amazon made me really realize I just really wanted to work at Tread. So I kind of just told them like, hey, you know, I'm almost done with Lambda. I'm going to be interviewing at other companies now. You know, I'm in the middle of an interview with Amazon. That said, I would rather just work for you guys. And yeah.
And they're like, okay, and then they made you a real offer.
Yeah.
All right. That's great. And here you are, what, about 6 months later?
Yep.
Very cool. All right. So we'll move on to the third part of the interview of three. So I guess my first question for you, and let's say there's no right or wrong answer, is these days, meaning like, you know, middle of 2019, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Yeah, so honestly, I don't really play that much these days. I live in an apartment in Seattle, which isn't really conducive to playing drums. That said, it's definitely something I would like to do more. Kind of, you know, in high school, I played a lot of jazz, and I did a lot of, you know, small gigs with, you know, trios and stuff. And I really liked that a lot. And in Berkeley, I kind of moved away from that, played a lot more rock and, you know, kind of bigger shows at bigger venues. And just actually the other day, I was kind of reminiscing on the days of playing just standards and a trio and how much I liked that. So I would like to get back into that more, definitely, soon. It's just a matter of, you know, finding a way to do that, especially in my current living situation. Definitely can't do it here. Sure. That said, still, you know, keep up with music, listen to music every day, listen to a ton of music. But yeah.
All right, cool. And okay, my next question for you is, obviously, people get into software engineering many different ways. It feels like it's almost probably a minority who do the conventional academic computer science route, and a whole lot of people get into it after their undergrad. You're one of the, I suspect that music graduates are a relatively small fraction of software engineers. So let's assume you've gone to school for something, maybe University of Washington, and then ended up ultimately as a software engineer. Is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now?
Definitely. In a weird way, I think almost maybe more than a traditional school.
Go on.
Which, yeah, I've thought about this question many times, like going with my current endpoint, would I have made it here going through a traditional school? And honestly, I'm not sure if that answer is yes. You know, first, one of the biggest things Berkeley taught me was just work ethic and will and determination. Like I thought I knew what working hard was before Berkeley. You know, obviously anyone who gets into Berkeley, they have to be a somewhat hard worker. You know, they have to put in the time into their instrument and, you know, be good at it. And I thought I had that figured out until I got to Berkeley. You know, I worked at the drum rooms all 4 years at Berkeley, and, you know, just seeing guys and gals down there grinding for, you know, sometimes 10 hours a day and like almost every day, like just seeing how passionate these people were and the work they were putting in, like that really inspired me a lot. And, you know, I took that to heart and to in all aspects of life. You know, when I was studying, figuring out, you know, software engineering and a Lambda, you know, I think I had that work ethic built up from, you know, practicing at Berkeley and seeing the other people and having them push me to be as good as I can. So that's one thing, just the work ethic that you learn from the environment of Berkeley, where it's, you know, pretty competitive. And I kind of thrive in competitive environments. I like it. I think it pushes me. So that was another thing that was kind of conducive to my personality with Berkeley. And then another thing I think is just kind of, you know, thinking outside of the box and being creative. Like for instance, one professor I had was George Howard, who was awesome. had a few of his classes, and he sparked a lot of interest in me and things outside of music. You know, he was the first time I heard about Bitcoin in like 2014, and that kind of sent me down a rabbit hole. And I think that's probably one of the first. I mean, I've always been into tech and computers and stuff, but then, you know, the concept of money as software kind of piqued my interest in software. So I think that was kind of the first seed in my brain to get planted around software development and things like that. And actually had your class, Kevin, statistics, and although statistics wasn't my strong suit, we read a book in there, Signal and the Noise, which I still have. And that book is just like so awesome and just totally changed the way I think about things, I think, in general. So, you know, having those experiences and kind of just kind of random one-off things. Another professor I had, Ralph Jacquardine, he had a lot of great guests and we read some good books in there. So in kind of, I feel like Berkeley in more of an abstract way, not necessarily, you know, X's and O's in a book or whatever, but kind of just more formed my worldview and how I see the world for the better, and, you know, really helped foster thinking outside the box and being creative and, you know, figuring things out on my own.
Got it. Very cool. All right, so let's turn that question around now, because Berkeley gives that one degree, a Bachelor of Music, and you went there knowing that, and, you know, you've done very well for yourself. But all that said, is there anything where when you look back at your Berkeley education, you're like, you know, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
One thing, I wish that it kind of hammered home the importance of an internship and really kind of helped more doing that. You know, I kind of had one for a professor who I won't name that it was good. It was fine, but it was never going to lead me to a job. And like, frankly, it didn't really help out that much in any career development sort of way. So I kind of wish that, and honestly, at that time I was pretty naive about, you know, the whole job thing. I didn't know how you got a job. I thought you just applied online and you did an interview and you got a job. I didn't realize the importance of an internship and things like that. So I do really wish that, you know, that was kind of hammered home more, or that Berkeley had some, you know, partnerships with, you know, Spotify or iTunes or Billboard or any of these music companies to really have a stream to feed students in to, you know, so that when they do graduate, that they have a job right away. Because, you know, I got pretty lucky stumbling into my entry-level job at ASCAP. Without that, you know, I applied a lot of other places to music companies, and it was, you know, not looking that good. So, you know, obviously having those connections there is massive. And I didn't really realize that at a younger age. Maybe Berkeley's doing more about that now. I know they do have
the music business department requires an internship, and they did it during your time, don't they?
Yeah, they do require it. And so I kind of, you know, honestly half-assed it a little bit and just got an internship with a professor to meet that requirement. I didn't really understand, you know, why that requirement was there or the importance of it, and that I would be making connections that would later lead me to, I mean, me talking now, it seems so naive and dumb that like I couldn't understand that, but that's the truth.
I understand. Yeah. Cool. Is that the one thing, the internship thing, or was there something else?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, otherwise, for, you know, what I wanted to do and why I went there, I think the education was pretty good.
Okay, very cool. So next question I have for you is, you know, let's say again, you got on a, found a pretty good path for yourself pretty quickly. I mean, you got, after a few months, you got this job at ASCAP. You're like, this is cool. But then you figured out that what you really wanted to do was work in the startup world. And hey, here's a startup that met another passion of yours even better. And then you went from there to deciding you wanted to do this software engineering. And, you know, within a year of deciding that, you had your job as a software engineer. So you got on this path pretty quickly. As I'm sure you're aware, a lot of other recent graduates haven't yet found that path. And they're, you know, people maybe in their last year staring out into the big scary world and wondering what's going to happen next. So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
Yeah, I would say, you know, follow your passion, and it's kind of cliche, but also to do what you want to do and do things for yourself. I think I'm a pretty driven guy. And when I figure out something that I want to do, you know, I put my mind to it and do it no matter what. And, you know, a lot of people, when I said I was going to quit my job and go to this coding boot camp to learn how to be a software engineer, you know, they like thought I was pretty crazy, frankly. But, you know, I knew it was something I wanted to do. I knew I was going to put everything I had into it, and I knew I was going to figure it out and be successful. And I wanted to do that for me. I wasn't going to worry about, you know, kind of anything else. And I think I kind of got that from when the band split up. You know, I'd put my heart and soul into that band for years, and then it just kind of disintegrated before my eyes. And so I kind of really wanted to take more responsibility for my life and kind of make my own path and not really rely on others. So, you know, I just kind of, you know, took the reins in my hand and, you know, try to forge my own path, my own way, and kind of do what I want to do and not necessarily do what's easy, but just do what I wanted to do to get where I want to go.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Very cool. And let's focus in a little bit more now, because mentioned you're my 177th interview and maybe my 12th software engineer. So I don't think anyone's listening to 177, but right, who's listening to this? Somebody who's maybe really thinking about software engineering as a career. And yeah, you know, pays pretty well. You could get a job pretty easily. Hey, I now know that there are even schools where you only have to pay if you get a good job. Isn't that a deal? And listen, there's a lot to recommend the career. So for someone who's, let's say, not yet doing it, but really seriously thinking about software engineering as a career, do you have any specific advice for them?
Yeah, pretty much try it out and see if you like it. You know, it kind of sounds almost too good to be true. Like, oh, just do this school for 9 months, come out and have a job. You know, you still have to like, it's a ton of work. Frankly, it was a lot more work than Berkeley was, just, in terms of like intensity. It might be a little different because, you know, I was kind of playing music as opposed to coding, but, you know, they fit 4 years of curriculum into 9 months. It's a lot. So you gotta like it, but you know, I would honestly recommend people just do what I did. You know, go to these free websites. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there for free. I mean, you can learn how to be a software engineer on your own for free. I just chose to do Lambda for the structure, but the information is out there. It's on the internet, and anyone can learn it. And I truly do think anyone can become a software engineer. I don't think you have to be extraordinarily smart. You don't need to be really good at math or anything. You just have to, you know, like solving problems and have the grit and determination to learn how to do it. So yeah, I would tell people go to freecodecamp.org, go to Codecademy, and, you know, do it every day for 20 or 30 minutes. That's the main, it's like learning an instrument. You got to do it consistently. You're not going to get good at drums by doing it once a week for an hour. You got to do it every day, even if it's small bits. Yeah, try it out. If you like it, you know, there's lots of boot camps out there. Obviously I'm a little biased and I think Lambda's awesome. But there's other ones out there. Like I said, too, you can learn it all by yourself online if you have that, drive and will to do it. Yeah, that's kind of what I'd say, I think.
Cool. All right. right. Well, hey, I just have one last question for you, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything you missed? Anything else we'd like to? Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not really. I think we covered it. You know, going into this interview, one of the big things I was thinking about, and you already asked it, was, you know, if I would get here without Berkeley. And, you know, the more I ask myself that question, I really don't think I would have. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, since I'm not, you know, really doing much in the music industry anymore or playing music, like, do you regret going to Berkeley? And, you know, I do not regret it at all. I think it was one of the best decisions I made. As I said, it really, you know, taught me how to work hard and shape my worldview. And I don't think I would have gotten that at a traditional school if I just went to a big school and was in a frat and, you know, did that whole thing. Like, I really don't think I would be where I am now. So, yeah, I guess I can leave it there.
All right. Well, that's terrific. Hey, Scott, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for making the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, likewise.
All right. And so look for a message from me in the very near future. And, yeah, have a great evening. Best of luck with everything.
Will do. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right. Get you. Bye.